Tom Vanderek, and you're listening to the Getting Smart podcast. Today, we're talking to Ryan Lufkin. He's the VP of Academic Strategies at Instructure. Instructure is probably the biggest and best learning management system in the world, serving about 7,000 mostly secondary and post-secondary institutions, 6 million learners around the world. Ryan, it's great to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me, Tom. Appreciate it.
We just finished kind of a weird year, 2023. We're sort of like whatever 18 months post pandemic. The pandemic was really interesting for secondary and post secondary institutions. We had to go virtual, and it really tipped the whole world to learning platforms. Everybody figured out if you weren't using one, you had to use one, and it forced a lot of people to either to adopt or to move to 100% use patterns around learning platforms. What are you hearing from your customers now post-pandemic? What's happening? What are they talking to you about?
Yeah, I think, you know, you said it. There was prior to COVID, there was some debate about whether the learning management system really was a necessary tool. And I think, you know, starting in March of 2020, that question was put to bed a little bit. And now Canvas, I think, you know, everybody's familiar with Canvas. You may not know the name Instructure as much, but Canvas has really become, you know, the most fastest growing globally, but the most widely adopted learning management system in North America. About half of all university students, and about a third of all high school students in North America use Canvas on a daily basis.
Ryan, I was doing some homework, and I realized that that Instructure started during the last crisis, like during the Great Recession, and very quickly gained wide higher ed adoption, starting with most of the state institutions in Utah. What was the big advantage that Canvas really introduced to initially to higher ed 10 years ago?
Yeah, it was interesting because if you look at, you know, I've been in ed tech for over 20 years and used to work with the likes of Angel and WebCT back in the day. And what you had seen is, you know, over the course of more than a decade, the consolidation of these technologies by really one kind of dominant player in the market that didn't have a great reputation for support or innovation. And along come two students at, you know, BYU here in Utah who said, you know, we don't love this learning management experience. We think we could build something better. Coincidentally, it was right about the time that SaaS software was really kind of hitting its stride. But I remember having conversations at that time about whether or not colleges, universities, schools in general would ever trust their data in the cloud. And one of the ways that you know, one of the primary shifts there, I think, was the success of Canvas. And you know, it was built with input from students and educators and admins, really saying, what do you want from an LMS? How can we make this the ideal user experience? But then how do we make sure that it's safe, secure, scalable? And you know, from the beginning, they worked with AWS to build it in the cloud so that it was more affordable. It was a better experience. They were, you know, a lot of institutions were able to break down kind of the traditional siloed technology, you know, the stranglehold a lot of tech leaders had on the space. And because it was a SaaS software solution, they could actually stand it up immediately on their own without a lot of internal support and start building out content for students and really go live. You know, we have stories of institutions going live in days and weeks when it really came down to it. And so when COVID hit, because we were the premier SaaS solution on the market, and we had such a, you know, kind of a lot of momentum around building our customer base, we became the go-to for most institutions that either had an unscalable, outdated LMS, or were just looking to improve the experience, or were really starting from a standstill. And so, you know, we grew pretty aggressively with the pandemic globally, and it's been an interesting experience.
And we watched your best customers both in secondary schools and colleges that were already using Canvas were able to pretty quickly and reasonably efficiently shift to online and hybrid learning. So I know you had a lot of really good examples of your best customers making the shift. Other folks really scrambled if they hadn't had a consistent use of a blended learning platform before.
Yeah, I mean, starting from a standstill, it was almost impossible for those institutions to turn quickly. And we even had, you know, competitors who, you know, there's some very, you know, high profile stories around entire school districts collapsing under the weight, you know, their software collapsing under the weight of the student load and things like that. And in many of those cases, we were able to jump in and say, hey, we can get you live in a matter of a couple of weeks. Let's do it. You know, they delayed the start of online school for 2 weeks. We jump in and stand it up, migrate their courses and, you know, get them seamlessly running. And it was amazing. You know, the first few months of the pandemics there, it's been interesting to be in a company like Instructure where everyone was taking customer calls. Everyone was answering support tickets. Everyone was helping educators, you know, from the CEO, the entire executive suite, you know, probably everyone but the janitor was in taking customer calls and helping make sure, you know, our schools were making the shift and we're doing it effectively. We have always been customer centric from that very first founding story.
And I appreciate that. And I know your customers do. The bad view that some parents got and that we all heard about with kids in these horrible Zoom classrooms with bad whole group instruction.
And a lot of it too is it's not even just the technology, right? In a lot of the cases, educators were doing the most they could without a lot of resources, right? And so if you didn't have your courses built online, if you didn't have them built in a blended format, those blended format courses were really easy to shift to fully online. You just recorded your daily interactions or had a live Zoom call. And you know, if you were in that mode, you had a pretty good experience and the students had a pretty good experience. If you were starting flat or you had a district where you didn't have a lot of resources for teachers, you know, my own daughter, she's now a freshman at the University of Utah, but she was in high school at that phase. And she had a teacher that was just recording hour long lectures that didn't really line up with the actual exams and things like that. And so she had some bad experiences and it was, you know, I felt for her educators. I felt for what they were going through. But, you know, one of the things that's amazing about Canvas as well is that we have this Canvas community. You can pretty much Google how to do anything in Canvas, and someone in our community has created a video on how to do it, right? I mean, literally how to integrate a Zoom link, how to integrate external videos, how to, you know, actually plug in third-party LTI apps. Someone's done it. And so if you really take the bull by the horns there and control your own experience, man, there's so many resources out there to get successful quickly.
Ryan, we seem to be facing something of a crisis in higher ed, at least parts of higher ed in some geographies where enrollment is down, where there seems to be some level of learner disengagement. There seems to be more mental health issues. What are your clients telling you about that? And what are you doing to try to help to respond to this interesting patch we're in?
Yeah, I think there's kind of a consistent theme of fatigue that's happening, right? Just when we thought we were done with COVID, here comes the generative AI revolution, and we have to deal with that too, and worrying about academic integrity and what the impact is there. And you know, it's interesting because even before COVID, we were talking about a decade of declining enrollments in traditional 2 and 4 year degree programs. And, you know, COVID had, there's data all over the place about what it did, but ultimately what we see is that decline continuing. And there's a number of factors for that, whether it was the student debt crisis that's really made a lot of students question, hey, is this the best path to a well-paying job? Or would I be better served to not go to college, right? There's certainly that debate. But there's also the proliferation of non-degree programs, right? This idea that we can you don't necessarily need a 2 or 4 year degree program for every job. And so one of the things that I always look at when I see that data is really focused on traditional 2 and 4 year degree programs, and it hasn't really caught up, I think, with the market offerings of some of these non-traditional programs. And so I don't think the situation looks as dire if you include all the data, but that remains to be seen a little bit. And so we are seeing a lot of our schools say, hey, how do we offer different programs, whether it's for traditional students, whether it's for adult learners that are looking to reskill or upskill. or even, you know, those people coming back looking for an encore career.
Right. And you mentioned AI a minute ago. What are you thinking about AI, or how are your customers using AI, both in student support, so you just mentioned, and sort of across the academic agenda?
Yeah, I mean, I'm declaring that 2023 was the year of panic around the AI revolution. 2024 is the year where we set the fear aside and we actually look at practical applications. And, I'm traveling to Monterrey, Mexico next week to have a conversation that I had literally a year ago, 2 months into this generative AI revolution. We talked about what it would mean, and now we're getting back together to talk about what it means a year later. We talked a little bit about it off air, but, I presented in Sydney, Australia, and Manila, Philippines, and Bogota, Colombia, and, all over the US and Canada this year around AI, and got the feedback. And I think, what we find is if you look at that traditional adoption curve, educators are behind students on that curve. And we need to find ways to help bring educators along, and just having them play with the tools and understand the tools and providing them training around AI tools to eliminate that fear and start looking at, hey, how can we use these tools to actually save time, to ensure learner success? They are not, the sentient robot that's going to take over the world. It's literally the time-saving tools that allow us to do our job better and faster. And we should all, whatever role we're in, but especially educators that really struggle with, workload, there's so many options that help them just do those mundane tasks and save time.
You've acquired a couple of partners in the last few years. Why Badger? That was a leading credentialing platform out there. What was attractive about that? How have you integrated that?
So there's two things. I'm going to give you a little bit of background on how we grow, how we as an instructor have chosen to grow over time. And we watched, prior to our founding, we watched some other vendors choose the path where they would buy their competitors and, end of life their software and force everybody over onto their software. And we decided we didn't ever want to be those guys. We want to be the ones that work really closely with our partners and say, hey, you're a perfect fit. We're going to bring you inside the tent. And so I think we're at 9 acquisitions since I've been here, something along those lines, about almost 6 years. Even before we purchased Concentric Sky, the makers of Badger, we purchased Portfolium, which is an e-portfolio and pathways solution. And so what we're working on is really what, most folks have coined the comprehensive learner record, right? How do we, from the first day of school to the last day of work, create a student-centric portfolio, passport, backpack, whatever you want that to be, that allows them to collect all of their proof of skills development throughout their life cycle. And that would probably start in junior high and high school, right? My son's in Spanish immersion. He'd already be collecting credentials around that now and putting that in his portfolio. And not just, a badge that says, hey, I know how to speak Spanish, but maybe a video that shows that he's achieved the seventh grade Spanish, proficiency and pair that with it, right? As that progresses all the way through college, you're getting the same thing. I've got a credential that says I know how to speak, or I know I'm proficient in public speaking, but not only that, I've got a video that shows I know how to do that. I know how to write in PR style, AP style. I've got those examples of content that I can write. And so how do we create that learner centric profile that is, compatible with open standards, like we work with One EdTech to develop, and so that all of the other badges and wallets and all the credential issuers out there are compatible and can easily drop into that same bucket. And then a student, because they are in control, is able to curate and showcase the skills they want for a potential employer or for potential future education as well.
You mentioned learner records in that transcript learner record category. You recently acquired Parchment. What was attractive about Parchment, and where are you headed with that acquisition?
Where Instructure and Canvas live at the university or at the K-12 institution, Parchment is the network that connects all of those pieces together. And so there, you know, if you're not familiar with Parchment, I just watched my daughter, you know, as she applied to the University of Utah and applied to different schools, work with Parchment to actually get her transcripts and then have those sent to the individual schools that she was applying for and make that transition. So I saw in person how that worked and how it collaborated with Canvas.
It, 10 years ago, Parchment made it easier to transfer those pesky transcripts as PDFs. Is it a digital transcript solution now? And how and when does this transition to a learner record system?
They've really focused on the digital aspect of it as well. And so that's where, when you start looking at credentials, and this is some of the great work we've done with One EdTech, is there's different types of credentials and there's a hierarchy of those, right? And one of the challenges around, you know, when you talk about credentials and badges, is that there's been a slew of four fund badges that have been issued out into the world. And so the market's almost been flooded with these credentials that sometimes it's hard to understand what the value of those credentials is, right? And so we released at the end of last year with One EdTech recommendations around a hierarchical stratification of those badges, right? And so you've got four fund badges at the top. You've got, you know, self-contained badges in the middle for different skills. And then you've got those verifiable badges at the bottom, right? And verifiable badges are much more like, you know, a four-year degree. You want to actually connect with the institution to confirm that that has been issued, right? Where a lot of credentials can be issued and they're with the metadata on board the badge itself, they are self-verifiable, right? Not everything has to be verified. And that's where I think when some people bring in Bitcoin or some of those higher level, Bitcoin is bank level encryption that you can't just enter a, hey, I forgot my password, right? And it doesn't really, I think, apply at this stage to student records. Maybe we'll get there in the future, but I think when the de facto standard now is I can list it on LinkedIn and there's no verification for any of that there, we're moving to the next level where there's the self-verifiable and then there's the verified by the issuing institution. And then there's the for fun stuff that's available. This is a quantum leap from where we are now with, you know, job websites. And I think kind of a direction of where we'll be in the future.
Some of the early learner record entrepreneurs were advocating for blockchain solutions, and a couple of small startups have tried to scale a learner record solution on blockchain. Is that the future of learner records, or is it overkill?
Yeah, I mean, to me, blockchain is simply overkill. You know, again, right now, when we put out our resume or we list things on LinkedIn, you know, it's somewhat ripe for abuse, right? You can put whatever you want out there, and very little of it is actually verifiable. While blockchain is that verifiable issuance, the problem is, and everybody's heard those stories of, you know, I'm a blockchain billionaire, but I can't find my password, so I can't access my billions of dollars. And for students, if you've ever worked with a EdTech software or a student-facing software, you realize just how many requests for change of passwords you get from students on a daily basis. And so it's frankly, from a usability standpoint for students, I think it's overkill at this stage.
So let's go. I want to talk about those badging systems, credentialing systems. That seems to be growing most rapidly in workforce. We're seeing some higher ed application. When and how do you think skills credentialing will become a part of most learners' high school experience?
I think we're getting there rapidly. I mean, I think that's one of the interesting things about the post-COVID world is COVID forced so much change so rapidly. I think that it's picked up the pace of change across education. And so we are seeing schools like Arizona State University really starting to take their entire catalog of courses and break those down into their component skills and then say, hey, these are the skills that make that up. We've arbitrarily in the past drawn this division between high school, you know, junior high and college. And I think we're seeing now is we're really starting to blur those lines with concurrent enrollment, dual enrollment, with corporate higher education partnerships. We're truly creating this first day of school, last day of work learning experience that's amazing. And I think it allows us to instead of having those arbitrary, divisions, say, okay, we're going to start those skills at the high school level, and then that'll carry through to the university level. And so I think at some point you'll see a true bridge where instead of employers having to wade through thousands of resumes of potential employers, potential employees, one of the things you'll see is them being able to look back and say, hey, here's the 10 recent graduates with exactly the skills I need for my job, and making that pathway. So easier for the students trying to get those jobs, and easier for the employers trying to match to those job candidates.
Our friends at the Carnegie Foundation, with support from the XQ Institute, have been talking about replacing the Carnegie unit. Replacing courses and grades is the core architecture of secondary and post-secondary institutions. That's an interesting initiative for you. Canvas is at its heart is sort of a course management system. So do you see a future where courses sort of move into the background and learner experience and credentialing systems are the new way that we organize learning? Where's this all headed?
It's an interesting conversation because, you know, I think that one might take a little bit longer to move away from the traditional course. I think we'll see that skills taxonomy mapped to individual. So a course will be made up of individual skill components and things like that. I think we've already seen some really interesting movement in K-12 with the movement away from the traditional A, B, C, D, F grade model to the mastery-based grade model, which I think is so much more equitable, so much more understandable. I think when it's done correctly. And I think that actually supports, now that you understand the mastery of individual skills and you're mapping to those, now replacing, you know, that traditional taxonomy with a skills-based taxonomy really does make a lot of sense because you're measuring the right things, right? I always say, you know, and it's something that we're going through, I think right now in the workplace where you've got these companies that are saying, hey, we need everybody to return to work. That's like saying a little bit of, you know, we need everybody to have their butts in the seats from this time to this time. You're measuring the wrong metrics, right? Those aren't metrics of success. Just having someone sit there for 8 hours is not success. And I think that's something that education has already figured out and is saying, hey, we're going to measure the right things. We're going to measure success as really the knowledge and mastery of these skills. And it really does put us on the right track for that future evolution.
Ryan, what's next at Canvas and Instructure? Anything you can tell us about the road forward?
No, I think right now we're spending a lot of time working with our international customers. It's interesting because you're in the Philippines. We spent some time this last year, and you know they've got both a mandate to return to on-premise courses, which some schools take as being, you know, kind of binary. It's either fully online or fully offline. And we're trying to make them understand that a blended approach, using that technology to support in-person classroom, makes it very easy to pivot if there's natural disaster or return of COVID. So it's not binary. You've got to think flexibly that way. And at the same time that they have this kind of mandate to return to in-person classes, their government is saying, hey, we need more credentials programs to upskill learners for the jobs more quickly that are available out there. And so it's very interesting. And so we're working with a lot of governments internationally to say, hey, here's the right approach. Here's what you can do with technology. Here's the problems technology can solve versus compound. I think we're doing a lot more to preserve the accessibility hurdles that we kind of overcame during COVID. We see that some K-12 institutions want to slide back to the old normal and not use that technology. And we're trying to explain that, look, these students are tech native. They have been using screens since before they could speak, and that's the expectation. And to go back to a binary world doesn't make any sense. And so how do we support that in rural areas, and international areas, developing countries with offline use of the technology, things like that? And so very exciting, you know, just watching this kind of wave of change that started, I think, with COVID continue on. And we're here to support our customers throughout that journey.
We've been talking to Ryan Lufkin. He's the VP of Academic Strategy at Instructure. Ryan, thanks for the update. It's great to get an inside view of what's happening at Instructure. And thanks for all the background on the recent deals. It's been exciting to watch you incorporate credentialing and transcript services to better serve your customers and learners worldwide.
Thanks, Tom. It's an exciting time in education.
I want to thank our producer, Mason Pasha, the Getting Smart team, and also our new pathway supporters, Stand Together and ASA. They allow us to explore these topics of credentialing, learner records, and emerging pathways. And until next week, keep learning, keep leading, and keep innovating for equity.
Thanks for tuning into the Getting Smart podcast today. We want this podcast to be actionable, insightful, and a great way to learn about what's next in learning. In order to stay on the cutting edge, we need people in the field to tell us what they're hearing, what they're wanting, and what they're needing to learn more about. Got a topic or a guest in mind? Send your recommendations to me, Mason at gettingsmart.com. And if you like what you're hearing, don't forget to leave a review in Apple Podcasts or subscribe wherever you listen. Feel free to share the podcast on social media using the hashtag GSPodcasts. Thanks so much.